BeCure Laser is now available in the UK. To get your very special offer right now, just call 0808 501 5122.
Grief is the conversation that no one wants, but everyone will need at some point in their life. Losing my youngest son, Murray, in 2019, as he had just turned 22 years old, has been and is the single most challenging thing I have ever faced. And the guests on the Good Grief Conversation help me with that challenge every day, and they make the journey just that little bit easier. I hope that the open and honest conversation you will hear will help you too. Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation, here on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Janet Jones. And welcome back to the Good Grief Conversation. We are getting ever closer to Christmas, and for many people, there is an elephant in the room, and that is the person who's missing and what to do with that. So today I have a wonderful guest. His name is Sylvain Nevis. He is a top psychologist from London, and he's been on my show before and offered some great advice. And today is no different. The conversation that we have, it goes deep, it goes sideways, it goes every which way. And I'm sure that there's going to be something in this conversation for you if you find yourself approaching Christmas and wondering, like all of us, what is it going to be like this year, with COVID looming, waiting for the instructions as to what we can and can't do, and what the risks are and all those kind of things. So in this conversation, you'll find some great ideas how to get the best out of the day and what it's like with that elephant in the room and how to make that elephant much smaller. Silva is a wonderful guy, and this conversation is very rich with content. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Here's Silva. Silva, welcome back to the Good Grief Conversation. It's so lovely to be here with you again and to see your smiling face.
Thank you for inviting me again. It's great to see you too.
Yes, you're very welcome. We had some great conversations the last time you were on, and now approaching Christmas, the year of COVID, as we were just talking about, you know, I think we've got a lot to brainstorm and a lot to get through. And this is a very unique Christmas that is coming up, and things that people would have dealt with anyway, you know, when they lose a loved one.
Yep.
But then you've got COVID on top of that. So let's sit comfortably and get stuck into this conversation.
Yes, indeed, a lot to unpack.
Where shall we start?
Let's start with what you're just saying, Christmas. You know, Christmas in normal years just brings up so many different emotions anyway, because it brings up the conversations of family connections. It brings the pressure to feel connected to certain members of the family, pressure to have a good time. But also, of course, grief and loss that happens, that, you know, in every family, there will be some years at Christmas time where one chair will be empty that used to be filled with a loved member of the family. And this year, all of those conversations will still be happening and all of those emotions will be happening, but with an extra intensity. First of all, because some people are still now wondering what Christmas is going to look like. It's just simply impossible to plan. And right now is a time of excitement, usually when people would start to plan. But we don't know. There are many people that are already grieving Christmas because they can't fly to their family, or they can't travel, or they can travel, but they don't want to because they don't want to risk an elderly person's lives in the family.
And that makes it really hard, doesn't it? And we hear that, you know, you can only have now a few sort of members of your family. And it's like, well, how do you choose? And like you say, if there is that empty chair of your loved one, there are certain key people who you do need around you to support you with that empty chair. So it's very hard. People are going through some really tough times right now.
Very, very hard, very tough times. And this year, there are some families, many, unfortunately, who will have more than one empty chair because the virus can spread very easily. And if one person in the family has it, another one can catch it. There have been some reports of mothers and fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers dying in the same year. And also, that empty chair is not just about the loss. It's also about, for many families, will be the memory of not being able to say goodbye because of the virus making it impossible for loved ones to be around in their loved ones' last breath. And some people not being able to attend funerals in the peak of the pandemic earlier this year. And that will come up. It will come up as grief, but more than grief, trauma.
Yeah, and a dissatisfaction, like a deep sorrow, really, that person, we all know people are going to die, but to have not been able to celebrate that person's existence is another layer of the grief that people are experiencing right now, isn't it? You know, it's very different and it's not what we are accustomed to, you know.
Absolutely.
So I guess that empty chair will also be a memory that you haven't been able to do that. But I guess that's because our mindset is established in celebrating somebody's life in a specific way. So maybe it's an opportunity to think about how to do that a little bit more creatively. Because, you know, when we look at something a certain way, we create whatever that is. So if we look at it in the loss perspective, then we will only experience loss. But if we look at it in a way of appreciation and celebration, then we get that back, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. It's, as you say, quite a bit cultural, isn't it? Because, I mean, this year, more than any other years, I've talked about death, obviously. And what I found, what was really striking, is how many cultures deal with bereavement and death very differently. And the process of mourning is different from one country to the next. And I think that this year has been a year where we all had to adapt and find different lives and different meaning out of how we normally do things. And I think at Christmas this year, we're going to have to find a different way to mourn people's death, that rather than being re-traumatized by it, we might have to need to look at the empty chair, as you say, and deciding to think of the good memories, the good times, the good stories, the celebration of that person's life, the gratitude that this chair had been filled for so many years, rather than the loss. But, you know, we are human, and it's not to say that we can't feel the loss. Of course, we have to be able to feel the loss, but to not lose ourselves in the loss, and to find some ways that we can have some respite from trauma this year. And maybe Christmas time is a time where we can think of that respite, that one day where we can think of the celebration rather than the trauma that's been with us for the whole year.
I guess in order to achieve that, you have to start in the run-up of Christmas to make the decision that that's what you are going to do on the day, and set some plans in place. Because just to wait for that day to show up, you don't really know how you are going to wake up in the morning. So maybe give yourself some tools beforehand. So what kind of things could people start doing as of now? So there's a week and a bit to go. What could people do between now and Christmas Day? You know, so let's say this is somebody who's, you know, in that dark place right now. Maybe they've only recently lost their loved one, which is a really tough space to be in. But Christmas is coming regardless. What could somebody do that will help them to celebrate at least moments of that day?
Well, I think one thing is to talk to the other people that are going to be around the Christmas table. And first, to agree that everybody is going to be on the same page about the conversation that's going to happen on Christmas Day. And again, it's not really about censoring people to not talk about the loss, but to really agree with the rest of the people around the Christmas table to say, you know, let's just all think of a fantastic memory that we have about this person, and let's just share it on Christmas Day.
I'm writing that down now because, you know, I'm a year and a bit on actually from losing my son, but this is Christmas number two. And last Christmas was kind of very numb and still a shock. But we did do bits that we tried to do that with. In fact, I bought a joke book because Murray was a joker. And so this year I've actually just ordered a second joke book. So that's now the new tradition, is Murray will get his joke book. But I do think it's a good idea, like you just said, to speak with the people who are going to be around the table and think of that story before Christmas Day comes, which I think is really nice to do.
Also to, I guess, not to be afraid of tears, because we don't have to be smiling at Christmas, of course. But so people are afraid of tears because sometimes they think that people a lot apologize for tears. And I think that tears sometimes is a great testimony of the love and the connection that you have with this person who is now an empty chair. And so, you know, to be able to honor that, I think, can be also a space of celebration. Celebration doesn't have to be singing and dancing. It can be sitting quietly with a tear of love for that person.
Yeah, I think that's really important because we, you know, associate tears linked with pain, and we are a society of pain avoiders. You know, it's like, let's do everything we can to remove pain, to numb pain, you know, and people will sort of give you a hug and pat you on the back. Oh, you'll be fine. Well, in this moment, I'm not. And that's okay.
And what you were saying about the joke book, I think it's good as well, because another thing that people can think about is an object or something that is really specific to that person that has passed this year. And I was thinking of a story I heard not long ago about somebody who died recently, whose favorite Christmas treat is a particular ice cream, because, you know, they just didn't like the traditional Christmas pudding, but they liked that particular ice cream. And to say that, you know what, this year we're going to buy it again. And this is going to be to honor the person that is passed, but we're going to buy the ice cream and we're going to put it there. And we're going to have a little scoop of that ice cream, just as you say, a new ritual. But this person leaving behind a new ritual for the family on a particular day like Christmas. So that is also something to think about. What could be the new ritual that people can take on Christmas Day or other special days like birthdays and anniversaries and so on, to remember that person with an object, a gesture?
I think also it's quite a nice thing to do, you know, because at the moment we're talking about people who are suffering grief in this moment, like the raw grief that's maybe come from this year or this last month or two. But, you know, if we've got family members who have passed away several years ago, you know, Christmas is about family. So why not include the other empty chairs and do things like that? Maybe that is a nice idea for this specific Christmas, when our families can't all be around the table. That then brings an opportunity to pull those stories out. We're not distracted by the table being too crowded. So now maybe we can give space to the loved ones that we have lost in the past and share some funny stories about them too, you know?
Absolutely, because you were saying that in our culture, we are pain avoidant, but we are also death avoidant. We don't talk about death and we try not to talk about death. And, you know, something that we have learned this year is that, you know, death is an everyday occurrence. And actually, all of us come from a long line of dead people. And so, you know, why not actually talk about death? And you're right, honoring people's stories about maybe dead people in the family that we've never met even, but, you know, a good story about them. And why not? Why not include them on a family day like Christmas?
Yes, yeah. Or their favorite joke, you know, that joke that would go on forever and eventually they'd get to the punchline. We have many members of our families who were good at that. Yeah, I think all those are really key. And it's so important, you know, like you were saying right at the beginning about before Christmas, meeting up with your family or having the conversation with your family about how you're going to do Christmas. Because I was speaking to one of my previous guests, Julie Foster, and she was widowed 5 years ago. And when they had their Christmas, you know, they all kind of carried on very jolly, but it was her son who couldn't handle it. And he then left the Christmas dinner table. But the reason for that was nobody had discussed how they were going to handle Christmas and what people felt and what they wanted. It was almost like, oh, just put the blinkers on and get on with Christmas. That day that is all mapped out, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, overeat, overdrink, open loads of presents, spend loads of money, and then the day will end and you carry on with your life. But there was this elephant in the room. And that's what happens, isn't it, if things don't get talked about?
Absolutely, yes. Elephant in the room eventually just crushes us. So it's so much better to talk about those things, yes. And even talking about it to say, you know, you don't have to stay at the dinner table if there is a moment that you want to spend privately. It's okay too, you know, just to really speak about let's be human. And you're right, rather than just really getting through Christmas as a normal day, let's just not make Christmas like a normal Christmas. Let's just change it. Be human. Let's all speak to each other properly.
Yeah, and from the heart, isn't it? Like, I guess this year, more than any, it's making everybody vulnerable and having to show up, not with the big Santa smile on your face, you know, making it that way and just being real.
Yes, real, absolutely. And, you know, like there was many, many, many families this year did not know last Christmas that it was going to be the last time that they will spend Christmas with a member of the family because, you know, they were healthy and whatever and no health issues and thinking, sure, we're going to have many Christmases. And this year, finding that they're not going to have Christmas with that particular loved one. So what it brings up really is the fragility of life and how we can all be vulnerable and how we don't really know. We never knew. We never had certainty of what would happen the year after. And this year, it's really to embrace that we never know how long life lasts and how long we're going to have our loved ones around us. And so to really pay attention to each other. And to talk to each other properly from the heart, human to human, and be grateful that you still have loved ones around the table and to never take that moment of sitting around the table together for granted because you never know how many more times you're going to have that occasion.
No, COVID or no COVID, that is a fact of life. And as we now know, it doesn't even matter how old that person is. You know, I get speak with some older people and my neighbors and stuff, and they're like, oh, you know, well, I probably don't have very long left. And you're like, well, nobody knows how long we have left. I could die before my, you know, elderly neighbor. So I don't think those things are actually relevant. And losing Murray was the example to that for me, is that, you know, you don't know. No one knows when the last breath is coming. But that's not a depressing thing, though. In fact, I think that should make people live more because you don't know that.
That's right. Absolutely. There is also some deaths that can be very difficult. Like, for example, losing a son is not with what we have ever imagined the process of life to be. You know, parents die before their children. And when that doesn't happen, it's almost the unnatural part of life, isn't it? And that is the kind of grief that is just so, so hard. You know, go through, you never go through it. You know, it's, you know, those type of grief you live with for the rest of your life. And I think it's important for people to know as well, whether it's whoever they lose, you know, a loved one, there is no getting over it. It's learning to live with it. And if Christmas means it's a pain in the heart every year, then it is what it is because there was that special connection. And that special connection is honored by the heartache.
Yeah. And it's about finding the new way, you know, the new style of Christmas, the new style of living. It's not even going back to anything. It's not getting through anything, as you've just said. It's the new way. And that doesn't have to be a dark new way. You know, it can be full of inspiration. And you were just saying about, you know, your loved ones not being there. Well, they're just not physically there. You just can't physically see them. But I don't doubt that they are actually there.
Yes, as we said, you know, like talking about somebody's favorite jokes, that's actually keeping them alive in some ways, because the stories are alive. And as long as the story lives in us, there is an element, you know, you can laugh with somebody who has passed just by laughing at their jokes again, type of things, right? But I think with certain deaths, depending on the death, people really have their worldview attacked, you know, just like I was talking about that, you know, it is not, you know, a child does not die before their parent. And that's a story that we all have. And when that story gets breached or destroyed, as you say, you have to create a new one. And it's a one that has to be, you know, a different philosophy, maybe a different way to see the world, a different way to have a life story. And with COVID, certainly what many people had to face is a new worldview that life is just simply not fair.
There's never a more truer saying than that. And if we expect life to be fair, then we are lining ourselves up for disappointment. It's a matter of time before you start to feel angry and resentful. And the truth is that life just isn't fair. There isn't an order. There's our expected order, but there isn't really an order. Life is what life is.
Yeah. And of course, the expected order, we have it so that somehow we can feel safe in the chaotic unpredictability of life, right? But, you know, when there's something like COVID gets in the way and we suddenly realize, oh my God, there's a world pandemic and we simply don't have a solution straight away.
And we're all vulnerable. I think this whole experience has actually, I think, made everybody realize the fragility of life itself. And I think once we're all let out again, I think life will become amazing because people, they've realized the fragility of life. So now they go, do you know what? We've just got to get on and live because you don't know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think it will make people really live more once we come out.
Yes, and also the importance of human connection. You know, that's one thing this year that we've learned very much not to take for granted human connection, because so many people who had to shield had to live with a lot less human connection, a lot less human interaction. And that is so distressing for many people. Just a simple human touch is so healing and so important. And I hope that post-COVID, we will all be a lot more aware that actually the most important things in life is human connection over making a lot of money, for example, over, you know, making big careers. I mean, I'm not saying this is not important too, but reprioritizing what's really essential.
This downtime from COVID, being locked down and all that kind of stuff, you know, it has opened people's eyes to looking at what is really important, hasn't it? Yeah, I was on a call, I'm part of a mastermind group, and within that call came these three questions. And the first question was, what do you want? And then the second question was, and what do you need to do in order to grow into what you want? And then what's your contribution? And so I thought, right, okay, I'm going to give time to these three questions and just allow them to come out, not do it kind of from my head, which is how we all like to live, really, because we're control freaks. But I just thought, I'm just going to allow things to come out and write down what comes out. And there was nothing materialistic on the I want list. It was all very much about community, love, companionship. And I'm sure it's because it's come from, you know, this separation from all of that, that now you go, wow, that is the most important thing. Human connection and community and belonging to more people. We can't do life on our own. In fact, there's grief all around that. This isolation is surrounded by grief, because grief isn't just about when somebody physically dies, is it? You know, it's grief of loss of anything.
And this year, many people have lost their lifestyle, many their jobs, but also many relationships, absolutely. And many people have lost that human connection that they had, that they used to have. For example, you know, nobody can have, you know, their aging parents, for example, at Sunday roast, right? Something that was maybe for so many people just the usual thing to do. And this year, there was no family Sunday roasts. That's a loss. course, even though those people are still healthy and, you know, lucky to be still healthy and so on, there is a major loss of that. And again, that's the loss of connection.
Yeah, it is. And tradition and all that kind of thing, isn't it? You know, it's so I was going to ask you, what do you think about people who are struggling with grief and loss that maybe, this is a big question, so get ready, but maybe we're struggling with our own mortality? It's okay thinking outward, thinking about what that grief and the loss is, but on reflection, is this so traumatic? Because actually, we know everything mirrors, you know, as psychotherapy and everything tells you, everything that's in your life is a mirror. So what is that reflection coming back to the person who is going through the state of grief?
Yes, I think it's it goes both ways, because in some ways, in order for us to survive, we have to be in connection with others. And that's really deeply built in us. So when we lose that connection, we have a sense of, okay, so there's the pain of the loss of the connection for the other person, but also a sense of, how am I going to survive now? And so it goes into quite a deep, ancient part of our brain, which is survival. And that's just one thing. But the other thing, as we've talked about earlier, that we are control freak a little bit. And so we know we like to control our lives. We like to control our destiny. We like to know what's going to happen next day. And this grief this year, grief anytime, any grief can really bring up that sense of, oh, life is short. And oh, gosh, people do die. And, you know, this sense of somehow we are death avoidant. So we don't think about it until it happens. And then it really is a really great opportunity to think that someday we are going to die. And if we have never thought about that before, that can actually be quite distressing for some people. How can we imagine not existing anymore? When we start to imagine that as human being, our brain simply cannot go there.
It's weird, isn't it? Why can our brain not actually go there? I was reading recently something along those lines, actually, and basically saying that their philosophy being that the mind can't go there because there's a deep part of us that actually doesn't die. So therefore, it doesn't make sense to us because there's a deep part of us that believes, but I'm not going to die. But we can't even imagine the, you know, the body actually not being here anyway.
Yes, that's right. And you know, maybe this is, I mean, we just don't know. There's a part of us that sticks around, or if we can't simply comprehend it because we are only being of awareness. And if we then have an absence of awareness, then what happens? You know, it's strange, isn't it? Just like we just can't imagine how big the universe is because our brain is simply just not designed to know how big the universe is. And, you know, maybe our brain is not designed to know what it's like to be, have an absence of self. I just don't really know. And it depends if we go to the scientific place or if we go to the spiritual place about those ideas. The real answer is that nobody knows.
No, nobody knows. You can only, like you say, it's where you go with your own personal beliefs. I remember interviewing a vicar a few years ago now. It's when I was doing interviews for Happiness. And I remember talking to him about his faith. And he said, I don't actually know that my faith is the truth. But what I do know is that it makes living easier and more comforting and more compassionate. He said, and if that's all that it gives me, I'm good with that. And I thought that was really, really honest for a vicar to actually say.
It's wonderful, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, that's all we can do. We can just hold on to the things of meaning of life that make sense to us and that we want to hold on to in order to, well, make sense of why we're here. We still actually don't even know how life started for us. I mean, there's plenty of scientific evidence of how we developed on this planet. why have we not found life on other planets yet? Are we that unique? Are we that special? You know, we still don't know about that big question either. So, you know, our own mortality, what, when we are faced with it, we are only left with questions. And then it depends on how lightly we want to hold that question. A question with possibly no answers. Some people can get really dark with it and distressed with it if that question with no answers is unbearable. But if we hold that question lightly, it might be just accepting that we have to live a life that makes sense to us somehow without really knowing what is actually the real meaning of it all.
Who knows, even when we die, we may or may not find out about that. But certainly right this moment, we'll never know that. Nobody knows the meaning of life, you know.
Meaning of life, yes. It was somebody, I think, in cosmology, who was saying that at some point, you know, the sun is going to go into supernova and it's going to engulf the planet and the solar system is going to die. And if then a couple of centuries later, a flying saucer just flies past where Earth was, they would never know that Earth ever was, because there will be no clues, no evidence. So it's kind of like, again, completely unthinkable to think in that way. But if we think that way, to think, well, everything that we know right now that's around us, that we know, that we can touch and that is in our lives, isn't going to be there one day.
But, you know, I guess we can bring that much closer to home, you know, because we don't know when the supernova is going to happen. It could be billions of years away. But bringing that closer to home, what we do know is that life is impermanent, that nothing ever stays the same. So actually, the things that we are currently surrounded with, we're not necessarily going to be always surrounded by those things. You know, I'm in a home that I moved into 14 years ago, but I'm about to sell it. That means pretty soon I'm not going to be surrounded by the same building, the same place, the same environment. And that takes a switch to move into the next phase. So we're doing that all of the time, aren't we?
That's true. That's true. Aging is a permanent loss, isn't it? Because so what we are now, we're not going to be in 20 years' time, no matter what that is.
But what we are now, we're not going to be next week.
That's true.
Getting really deep here. We're getting deep. I like this. But going back to what we were saying about everything being a mirror on us, I'd like your thoughts on this, that when we lose a loved one or a job or, you know, a relationship, whatever, the mirror that we have been holding up to ourselves during the time when that all made sense, in a way, when the loss comes, the mirror gets smashed. Do you think that's the thing that possibly explain like this transition period that we go through at that? What are your thoughts?
Yes, I think so, because the mirror also is a mirror of what we know of ourselves at that moment in relation to something else or somebody else that we have a connection with. So, you know, whether it's a job or a loved one or whatever, in a way that it creates almost some kind of like status. We can put a label on us. We can say, I'm a husband, or I'm a father, or I'm a son, or I am CEO. And when that job gets lost, you're no longer CEO. So then what are you? And then there can be an existential question about ourselves, our worth and who we are and how do we stand on this planet if I'm no longer a husband or no longer a CEO or no longer a father, then what else? And I think this is when maybe you're describing the mirrors being cracked or being smashed, because suddenly we don't recognize ourselves any longer, because we have to redefine who we're going to be in this new space after the loss.
And during that loss, it feels like the ground has moved underneath you, doesn't it? You know, you feel there was a security before, i.e. a solid, what you believed to be a solid ground. And then that gets moved, and then suddenly you're in this like no man's land, really.
No man's land, completely alien territory.
And what would you say then? What would you recommend that someone could do in that moment?
To slow everything right down and to maybe not have so many questions of who I am and what am I next, but to focus on the things that they know is still around. So for example, one thing that we do know is that we still, for example, we have our body, right? And so we can focus on, I am here, I don't know my status, I don't know what life is going to be like, I'm in complete transition where I know nothing, but I know I'm breathing. And I know I can feel my heart beating still. And I know my feet can touch the ground. And if that's all there is to start with, to find still a space of, I know something, that is our body.
Right. So really come into this very present moment. Don't worry about all that big stuff at this moment in time, because you don't have the answers for that.
Exactly. And going through a major transition, usually the best way to do it is by staying in the moment, being aware of this moment, not worrying about the next moment. Of course, we're going to worry about it, but when we worry, just refocusing on the here and now, and somehow trusting that there will be another here and now in the next minute with another embodiment of who we are at that moment. And to trust the process of transition, meaning that at some point there will be some answers coming and some great golden nuggets of lessons about life.
Yeah. And I guess by trying to take control and go in our head, we miss those golden nuggets because you can't see them, can you? Unless you slow down, unless you step back. That's very hard for people, isn't it? That's not like that's an easy thing to do.
No, it's very hard. I mean, even when you're not in transition of a big loss or grief, just staying in the here and now is very difficult because our mind is always trying to go to the next thing in the future, you know, or worrying about something that's just happened in the past or worrying about something that's not yet happened. It's just the way that our brain works to keep us safe in some ways. And, you know, but at the same time, forgetting the here and now is when we can really forget about what is actually going on right now. And when the past and the future gets really kind of unsettled because of a grief and we don't have any more places to compass, basically, then all we have left is the here and now. It's really super important that we learn to stay there. And it's very, very hard, but possible.
It is possible. But also, I think, you know, in the deep grief, you really are only in the here now. Like you just said, I mean, you've had the past and you do have those memories, but you don't have the future that you were anticipating. And maybe that's the biggest mistake, is that we anticipate our future and we shouldn't.
Well, sometimes it's good to anticipate the future. It gives us motivation for doing things and so on, you know. But yes, there are some moments where, you know, when we just simply don't know what the next day is going to be. And although when you're in deep grief, there's nothing else but the deep grief. A lot of people want to speed it up because, of course, it's not pleasant to be in deep grief. So they want to wish it away and they want to think, oh, I want a better days now. And they're actually extending their grief, you know, by wanting to wish it away rather than just really thinking, you know, trusting that the better days will come. But in the meantime, they have to stay in that uncomfortable place.
Yeah. And today is simply the day. It is what it is.
And making a day a write-off sometimes is okay. It's okay to have a write-off day.
Yes, yeah. And you know what? It's okay to write Christmas Day off if that's what you want to do.
Absolutely.
You know, if you want to go, do you know what? I'm having a duvet day on Christmas Day. I won't do it every Christmas, but this Christmas, so be it.
Good for you, yes.
You don't have to live up to those expectations of what Christmas has always been, therefore I must make that again, do we?
You know, we can choose whatever we want to do at any given day, even days like Christmas. We can change the rules.
We can change the rules. And I think this year, above all years, we have permission to change the rules. But what we hear from social media, the media, and listening to all the Christmas songs and all that kind of stuff is the pressure to make our Christmas like the Christmases that we hear about. And therefore, if we don't do that, then we're doing something wrong. What would you say as this amazing psychotherapist?
Stop listening to social media.
Get off it.
Yes, just have your own rules. Have your own Christmas that you want to have. It doesn't matter if it's not like the other Christmas or not like your neighbor or not like the TV commercial. Do your own thing.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's a really beautiful place to draw our conversation to a close.
Yes, it's always so great to speak with you.
And you too, Silva. I think
we go very deep together.
We do.
Speak to each other.
I know. It's great though. No one else is having these conversations, you know, like the really deep conversation. Because like you just said, people are afraid to talk about dying. Death avoidance. You know, it's a Buddhist saying, isn't it, that says live with death on your left shoulder. Because actually, it will make you live more.
Yes, and that's the only certainty we have.
Silva, it's been an absolute joy once again. We'll be back in 2021. We'll do this again.
We will. It was great to see you today.
Thanks very much, Silva, and I'll speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Well, I told you that conversation went deep and sideways, didn't I? Such rich content. I love talking to that guy. He's so easy to talk to and to get his professional thoughts on things, plus his personal thoughts on things. I was scribbling away whilst I was interviewing him, and some of the things that he said really resonated with me and that I will be using myself at Christmas. I will definitely be speaking to my family to say, what do we want it to be like? And how are we going to embrace Murray into our Christmas once again? So that's really important. And also, you know, to start thinking now about the stories that we want to share, the special things of theirs that we want to bring into the day. And, you know, even if you find yourself alone at Christmas or just with one or two family members, as opposed to a big Christmas that you may usually have had, you know, it's still possible to bring all those people into the room and into the day with you. And we have discussed several ways in which to do that. So you can always pop back and re-listen to the podcast as well. And I love the idea of honouring our loved ones with food. I'm going to be thinking, Murray loved food, but I'm going to think about what that one favourite thing was that we can bring into our day on behalf of Murray. So I've certainly got lots out of it. I really hope that you have too. And don't forget, you know, you come and join us on social media. We're on Facebook and we're on Instagram. And it would be great to hear from you and to have some connection with you. And I wish you a really peaceful and joyful festive season. I really do. I think it is going to be different, but that doesn't mean it won't be good. We make it as good as we can. So next week, I have Rachel Kelly to speak with. And Rachel is the author of a book called The Happiness Kitchen. So we're going to be talking about happiness around food preparation and things like that. And that's the one we're going to do just before Christmas to warm you up and get you ready for that festive day. So in the meantime, I'm Janet Jones, your host of The Good Grief Conversation. And if you want to find out more about us, then go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com. And of course, we have our podcast extras over there. So that is a really big library of gifts from my guests that can help anybody. There's something for everybody in there to help you along the grief journey and transition. So head over there and join us on podcast extras. You do have the option to support us if you can do, but obviously it's also available for free because the important thing is to get help out there for everybody. However, we do appreciate your support. So if you can do that, that would be fantastic. Until then, I will see you next week and I look forward to that. You can contact me at janet@thegoodgriefconversation.com. If there's any way that I can help, then I certainly will. In the meantime, have a great week and I'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.